Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit, nonpartisan forum open to the public. I'm Gloria Duffy, President and CEO of the club. To learn more about events or membership, join us online at commonwealthclub.org.
Good evening, and welcome to tonight's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the club, representing the Business and Leadership Member-Led Forum. Our program tonight is Global Corporate Social Responsibility: How You Can Scale Your Philanthropy and Volunteer Programs Worldwide. Please note that this program was also listed in our February and March magazine and on the website as truth-telling about corporate responsibilities. It is my great pleasure to welcome Bob Saldick, who is a former president of the Board of Governors at the Commonwealth Club and continues on the board even today. He is also a CEO of Raycom.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here. Pamela Hawley is an old friend, and I've been involved with her for, well, I shouldn't say that. I've been friends with her for a long time, especially with her father here. Pamela has been a unique human being. She has founded organizations which have had legs and which still survive and which are doing extremely well. Her current major organization, I think it's fair to say, is Pamela Hawley as the founder and CEO of Universal Giving, which has become one of the most well-known organizations in its field. It's a web-based marketplace that helps people give money and volunteer with equal opportunities all over the world. All the money that people donate to this organization get distributed to the people that they've studied. Pamela also founded Universal Giving Corporate, a customized service helping Fortune 500 companies scale their own corporate social responsibility programs worldwide. Pamela has won so many awards that I won't bother going through them, but one I like is the Jefferson Award, which is the Nobel Prize in community services. So with great pleasure, I once again introduce Pamela Hawley to the Commonwealth Club.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here this evening, and I like what Bob said. We are old friends, and that's very much the same motive of this panel this evening, talking about what's going on in global corporate social responsibility all across our world. It's a conversation tonight. We look forward to your questions and to making this interactive and something that we can really dive down deep and get into the issues of what it takes to scale these corporate social responsibility programs worldwide. So we're going to be discussing this, and just as a little bit of a basis here with Universal Giving, we help companies with their global CSR programs by going in and determining what kind of policies do you have in your headquarters on community relations and corporate social responsibility, and how can we help scale those worldwide while also taking into account what's happening on the local field, the local ground? It's incredibly important that you've got some stability from what comes from headquarters, but then also listening to what's happening in all the countries in which your local employees are operating. And very important to be sensitive to both. We'd love it if we could customize across every single locale and country, but it's not possible. We have to be resourceful and realize that giving and volunteering are wonderful and needed, and at the same time, they also need to be able to hit and meet your bottom line as a company. So in what we do, we help companies with their strategy worldwide. We help vet their NGOs. I'd say a key challenge for us when we're working with companies is how do we qualify the NGOs with whom you work? A lot of people look at overhead. That's important. Finances, terrorist laws, all of those are very important. But what we do is we take it to another level by working from a venture capitalist perspective. Most VCs look at a plan or an idea and they say, great idea, and the next question out of their mouth is, who's the management team? Who's the leadership? And that means that when we're looking at quality, You have to look at both objective information, such as finances, as well as subjective information, which are judgment calls about people, about leadership, about who are running these programs. And that's where we have a team of worldwide experts on the ground that helps us do this due diligence on nonprofits. So we function as an innovative nonprofit. 100% of every donation goes directly to the causes that you donate to on Universal Giving. And the way we make money is by working with companies to help them with their programs. That's how we can offer the service for free to you. So this evening I have a very esteemed panel, very excited about all the wonderful leaders on our panel this evening. And we're going to start off very, very briefly talking about a very quick one-minute synopsis about what their program is and one signature program they'd like to talk about and one of the challenges. And I've just talked about one of our challenges. It's determining quality. How do we make sure that where your money is going is a top-performing nonprofit? That's one of our challenges. So for one of our first speakers tonight, I'd like to introduce Trissa Thompson from Dell. She is the Vice President of Corporate Social Responsibility there. She is someone who's had practical experience on the ground. She just returned from a trip in India to Delhi and to Bangalore, looking at 10 of their NGO partnerships there. And she leads a program called Youth Connect, which is very involved in technology and working with youth across the world. She has been with Dell for 13 years. She also leads WISE, which is a woman networking program, helping women at Dell, and she's quite an accomplished leader. So, Trisha, if you could start off a little bit about Dell and Youth Connect, that'd be wonderful.
Thank you, Pamela. It's a pleasure to be here, so thank you, everybody. Youth Connect is our signature program, and we're in 10 countries now globally, and the foundation of our giving at Dell is to take our dollars and our technology and our talent of our employees, and how do we combine those to have the most powerful effect. And we are focusing on underprivileged children and connecting them with technology and using that to help them prepare for a better world, and how can they do more with their lives and what they have with technology. And it's really been an inspiring journey that we've been on so far. And Pam, I don't know if you want me to talk a little bit about some of the challenges, maybe?
Yes, we're definitely going to talk about challenges. Our other title this evening was truth-telling, and we're going to get into the truth-telling. So you were just talking a little bit about some differences between China and India in your program. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, and it wasn't just China and India, but I can tell you the differences in the compare. One of the things you have to really focus on when you're going into a global program, and my team, by the way, that does all of our global giving is a team of four. And so it's very, very small. So when we're doing the global giving, you really have to look at the quality of the programs where your dollars are going and your technology is going. And so when we were recently in India, we looked at how is the technology being used with the children in the classroom. So we went and visited the classrooms. They were doing demonstrations, or we participated in the classroom exercises. And in one of the classrooms, we had the same experience in China, technology, the kids were using it to solve problems, to connect inner-city kids with kids that were out in more rural areas, to work together to solve things like looking at climate change in China or how to do a neighborhood association in India. We went to another one of our facilities where we're giving some money in India, and all of the students sat and they had their notebooks. They need to share them in front of them, and that the textbook was on the notebook, and the teacher had, you know, she projected her notebook screen up on the top, and it was a textbook. And so they were all reading from the textbook together using our technology. And that is a very ineffective way to use our technology to teach children how to get better in the world. And one of the things you have to face is once you're in one of these locations and you touch these children's lives, your employees work with them, they have your computers, it's very hard to get out from both a brand perspective, just a logistics perspective. So you can't just turn around and walk away. So you have to think about how do you help that organization do what they're doing better? And if ultimately you can't, you do have to think about long-term, how do you make a transition?
And Trisha, that's a very good point. One of the things that we have to make sure when we're going into global corporate social responsibility, it can't just be the giving and the volunteering and the goodness. It has to make sure that it improves the brand of the company, that it attracts employees. Most young employees are asking when they're seeking jobs these days, they're saying, what does your company do for the community? So it's about employee retention and attraction. It's also about client stickiness. Can your clients feel good about you as a company? And then hopefully it is eventually about product adoption. But that's one of the biggest challenges as abroad is that once you go in, it's not so easy to pull out. You have to think about those other factors about how it's going to affect your brand, even if the program is ineffective, and make sure that you can turn it around. I want to introduce our second speaker, Gabi Ziedelmeier, who is based in Switzerland and prior to that was in Germany. She has been with HP for more than 25 years, a phenomenal leader there who was a global VP of marketing. And now she is a VP of global social innovation. And she's going to speak about two programs that she's been involved in, one that is identifying counterfeit drugs, and the other one is entrepreneurship, very important about youth across the world and making sure that we have a stable enough workforce as we progress. I noticed the other day that Tunisia has about 30 to 40% of their population there are unemployed students from college who don't have any jobs. It's 30 to 40%, and that's a high amount. And so we're really hoping to be able to groom a new workforce for this new world.
Well, thanks a lot, and it's very good to be here to talk a little bit about our programs. And I have to say, listening to what Teresa just had to say, we face exactly the same. It's not about money only. It's not about the technology only. It's really about bringing innovative solutions and employee skills to address social issues. HP has 325,000 people in 170 countries, and they have phenomenal skills. They can help nonprofits to do marketing and outreach. They can help them with project management. They can do pro bono legal work, and you name it. So this is one of the challenges to create the platforms and make it easy for employees to have platforms that they can engage in. The programs that we've chosen that we think we can best serve with our technology are in healthcare, education, and entrepreneurship. In healthcare, what we're trying to do is identify the big problems that technology can address. And one of it is the fact that about 700,000 people die every year from taking counterfeit drugs. So we started a program in Nigeria where out of a population of 158 million, 110 million are infected with malaria. If these people do not get genuine medication, it could be medication that's either useless, that could, you know, basically lead to death, or it could be toxic. So what we've done is we've partnered up with a small NGO out of Ghana in Nigeria called Impedigree. And what we've come up with is a cloud and mobility solution. So when patients buy their medication, they scratch off a code on the medication, they SMS that code to a free number and get immediately, within seconds, an answer back whether this is a good medication. And this is based on location information and mass serialization of numbers. And it's a cloud solution that you can take from Nigeria to any other country in the world. So this way, we're really addressing a social need by bringing technology. The second very quick example is on entrepreneurship. As Pamela has said, it's not only in Tunisia, but it's around the world. A lot of graduates come out of university and they cannot find a job. And what we find often is that their skills are too theoretical. So what we're teaching them are practical skills, how to use IT to do a marketing plan, how to use IT to do a finance plan, accounting, how to set up your website, how to do your collateral, how to crowdsource for logos, and so forth. So taking that course means they can set up their own shop, become entrepreneurs, and we've created thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs this way by equipping these young people. So these are just two examples.
Thank you. And we have our final speaker on this evening as well, Mark Edmonds, who is the vice chairman at Deloitte, and also he is a regional managing partner. And one of the main components of Deloitte is focus on education, and specifically character education. We talked a little bit about leadership before. This is exactly where Deloitte is heading, and about 3 years ago, our CEO met in the White House and made a commitment of over $100 million worth of hours by 2014 of employee hours devoted to volunteering. It's quite a commitment, and that is global. So the Deloitte 21 program is designed to help provide education, to help groom these leaders, and to give them the skills to be a part of a burgeoning workforce. Mark, if you could speak to that.
Sure, Pamela. I'm very happy to be here. Several years ago, we concluded that just giving cash into the community was not really working. That we have 175,000 people that wake up every day and they run around solving business problems for clients. And why shouldn't we use those same skills to solve the same business problems in the not-for-profit community? So we decided to go hard in education because we, like you in the audience, see a massive crisis in education in the United States and actually around the world. And we think that the workforce for the 21st century is not going to be ready over the next several decades unless we build a stronger college-going culture. College is not for everyone. We've got to get a lot more folks that are going to get into the system. Just across the bay in Oakland, almost 50% of the young boys and girls don't finish high school. And many of them don't because they don't have a mother or father who did the same. And so great organizations like College Summit are enabling them to get into college. Pamela, you mentioned character education. At Deloitte, we've been around 150 years, and we believe we have brand permission around character education. We actually need more Bill Gates and less Bernie Madoff. And the way you do that is you teach young boys and girls life lessons when they're younger. And organizations like Positive Coaching Alliance down in Stanford are doing just that, helping coaches coach the right way, that yes, you want to be competitive and win, but much more importantly, honor the game, honor your opponent, play fairly, play as a team, better yourself. Those are great things. Those are the types of young boys and girls that eventually I want to hire. I want as our public policy makers. I want as doctors and lawyers. So character education is as important as the technical education we give around the world. So we've decided to go very deep on education, and personally, I go very deep on character education. It's very important to me.
Mm-hmm. Great. One of the things I'd like you to talk about this evening is what do you think is the main reason? I cited a couple of them earlier this evening. What's the main reason that you all have a global corporate social responsibility program set up? Is it for the employees, for clients? Is it for helping keep people happy on the ground locally? Gabi, why don't you start off?
So for HP, I think our founders have been known for over 75 years to basically give back to the community from the first day of operations, which differentiates HP from many other companies that just have recently discovered that it's important to be a good social citizen. So being and creating good social impact has been in the DNA of the company. But I think also in order to do that in a sustainable way, you have to take a look at the benefits this also brings for the operations. When we take a look at our reputation, and we do reputation surveys around the world, 25% of our customers' reputation is really made up by the factors of the work that we do. They look for us to provide training, to address the digital divide, to create jobs. 25%, that's a really, really big number. Also, we help the company grow. We enable discussions, relationships, and partnerships that the business cannot create. We have, for example, done a project with the Clinton Health Access Initiative in Kenya, where we expedite the blood testing of infants, and this has really helped us to sit at the table now with the health ministry in that country. And all of a sudden, we're being invited when they do requests for proposals. One also very important point is that our employees want to see us engage. And again, HP is a metrics-based company. We measure everything. We have taken a look and have asked the employees around the world, and we've seen that every point in the perception that goes up in our employees' perception of our being a good social citizen basically makes them twice as likely to stay with the company. Now think about that. We all need our really good employees. They are the best asset that we have as a company. And this work makes them engaged, ties them to the company as we share the same values. And so I think, you know, there are plenty of good reasons why this is important beyond just creating social outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're about stickiness, right? We're in the business of we don't sell widgets or anything else. We sell our people, right? We have 175,000 people, and we sell advice to companies. And you know, when you talk to recruits on campus, they actually interview us, right? We talked about that early. They interview us and say, what is your corporate social responsibility efforts? What are you doing today? So they interview us as much as we interview them. And it's just, it creates huge stickiness, and it aligns with our business strategy. if you go deep on a particular topic. And when we talk to our people about education, that sticks as well, especially youth education. In the end, it's all about the kids. It's all about the kids. And if we help lift them out of these challenges of not being able to get into college, we think we can do pretty enormous things. Mm-hmm.
I just want to provide a reminder to you that you are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program and our program this evening, How You Can Scale Your Global Philanthropy and Volunteer Programs Worldwide. Trissa, did you have another comment?
Yeah, absolutely. Dell was founded completely on the idea of democratization of technology. So if you know the Michael Dell story, started out of his college dorm room, and what he did was put it on the Internet. So we were the first company that really launched that whole purchasing on the Internet. I was at Dell when we finally hit $1 million a day in technology sales. The other thing we did is bring the prices down. So the whole company really that was founded on this whole idea of how do you make technology accessible to everybody. And as we have become a global company, that's part of our core strategy going global as well. And a piece of that is very natural for us to do that for people then who are underprivileged. How do we make sure everybody has access to technology? And even though prices have come down, having just come back from India, really not everyone can afford the technology yet. We hope to get closer to that point. So how do we help that? And then another key piece to our whole strategy has always been about education and how do we work with children. And so this is a natural extension of our founder.
One of the challenges, too, that, you know, as we speak about global is it's a very, very big world out there. And so you've got companies and offices all over. Many of these positions are unpaid. You have got employees who are working on global CSR, but most of them is just a volunteer workforce. What do you do when, for example, that person who's been in that position, what do you do when they exit?
So this is something Pamela and I were talking about earlier because it's a real problem. When we give money globally, you know, I'm at the headquarters in Austin, we absolutely ask our employees to get engaged and to run the programs locally for us. So whether it's in Mexico, Brazil, Morocco, the United Kingdom, I mean, across the globe, that's how we run the programs. We don't hire anybody new. We don't use an outside third party to run the programs. It's run by our employees. And we get very passionate employees. You'd be amazed at the amount of volunteerism. But sometimes that employee gets a different job or they leave for personal family reasons, and then you sometimes you have this big gap. And so we're really working on figuring out what's the right answer to replace those employees very quickly. So we usually have a team, and that helps. So you've got some other people that understand. But we were actually just talking about the idea of sort of co-chairs in every region, and I think that's actually a fabulous idea. So I'm going to use some of your ideas. I'm going to launch them tomorrow.
Okay, that's great. It's one of the things that we do with our clients is suggest that having co-chairs so that if someone leaves, you have someone else cross-trained and ready to go. It's one of the most important things in building a team. We do that a lot at Universal Giving. I've got some of my wonderful team members over there, and everyone knows we have cross-training days and sessions where everyone is getting cross-trained so that we all are able to help jump in for whatever reason that someone might be there. And when you're dealing with global, and especially with so many moving components on global, it's essential that you've got that team, and not just a team supporting the leader, but someone in a co-chair role that can take on that leadership role. And, you know, speaking into this about competing resources, we all know we've got a major crisis right now in Japan. Yet at the same time, you all have corporate reasons and corporate strategy and corporate objectives as to why you're doing this. I'd like to ask you candidly, and this is where we get to our truth-telling as well, are you involved in this crisis in Japan? It's not a wrong or a right answer. If you are, why or why not, and how, if at all, does it fit with your strategy?
Yeah, I guess I'll start, Gabby. We're very involved because we have 9,000 Deloitte folks that live in Japan, so we're very concerned. We're praying for, you know, a positive outcome, and right now it looks very, very bad. But in terms of corporate social responsibility, we are aligned around education, but we have people that wake up every day and think a lot about loved ones that are over there, whether it's family or other colleagues they work with, because as Deloitte people work on various projects, they work with global teams every day. So there's a lot of people in the San Francisco office that know a lot of people in our Tokyo office, and we actually even have offices in some of the corridors that were affected. So even though we might not go directly, go help fix this, we will solicit from the 175,000 people around the world, you know, cash donations, generally through in the U.S. through the American Red Cross, because they're a very effective organization in deploying that money into Japan, and Japan has reached out and asked for a lot of help. So we do that, but again, you have to make choices, as you said, Pamela.
So the way we react to disasters is mainly through the HP Company Foundation. So we've made an immediate donation to save the children of $250,000 and to the Red Cross, again, for $250,000, and we're matching another $350,000 of employee giving, and that's going very, very, very fast. So a lot of our employees are stepping up. I assume this whole amount will be matched, which would be another $700,000. What we're also doing is we're bringing the businesses forward. They have approached my team to see what type of product and technology donations would be useful in Japan. Now, that again is through the businesses. So my team has a strategy on healthcare, education, and entrepreneurship, and we could not all of a sudden react to this disaster out of my team. But we have the foundation that's stepping up in terms of the cash, and we've got our businesses stepping up in terms of the technology. So we will have a very broad and hopefully very, very good support for the really terrible situation in Japan. And we also have a lot of employees and would like to make sure that we help the people of Japan.
Thank you. Similarly, Dell has also given cash donation, and we're matching employee donations as well. But I also wanted to point out some of the practical realities of this specific disaster, and every disaster is different that you face. This one has some really hard realities about the aftershocks, the lack of electricity, and then obviously the nuclear power plant issues that they're having. So in some instances when we've had disasters, people know right away what they need. In Katrina, it was pretty fast. People knew what they needed. We could get the hospitals up and running in terms of the technology very, very quickly. Technology and whether they have servers right now is not the core focus of what's going on in Japan. So this is one that's actually going to play out over time. We will know more about how we can better give our dollars and our equipment as time progresses on this one. And you have to really look at every disaster individually. They're all unique, and they're all awful. But each one has its own kind of characteristics, and you have to respond as a company in kind to what those characteristics are.
And Trista, that's a really good point, because we all have this immediate emotional response of wanting to help people who are in need in this situation. But you touched on this a little bit. Can you speak a little bit about this effort of long term? We have the initial crisis. People get funds out, and then all of a sudden there seems to be some donor or corporate fatigue. How do you look at, has your company look at, rebuilding for the long term regarding a crisis?
So probably the most recent example would be Haiti, where we've been involved in that crisis from the beginning, and we are still involved in both an educational way and with our product. So you can't, again, it's a situation you can't just walk away from immediately. You also can't stay there forever. So it's a fine balance, and it's really something you have to look at. How does it match your business objectives? How does it match what your resources, your available resources are? One of the things we were talking about a little earlier, I don't if it's my age, I can't really tell, but it seems like there are more global disasters than there used to be. And so you really have to balance what resources you have available there. And so it's a balancing act. Mm-hmm.
Now, do all of you have budgets specifically for crisis, or is it more something that comes out of your foundation?
Yeah, we do, and we'll deploy cash in this one as well. It's a global fund. But, you know, generally, that's really the reason when you look at corporate social responsibility, it needs to align with your business strategy. If it's not, it's not sustainable. So you'll put money over here or put an effort over here, and if it's not aligned, when people leave, to your point, they've left, and you're left with not sustaining that effort. And so that's why, as an organization, we said, you know, education is a big thing to solve, right? It's hard to even solve in the state of California. But if we can be leaders in solving this issue of creating a college-going culture, getting more kids that have never even thought about going to college, going there, we can create a 21st century workforce that can be competitive in the world. So we've chosen that as an organization. Every organization chooses their own path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to go to some audience questions right now. We've got an interesting one that we're going to cover right now on taxes. So here is a question. Considering that within the U.S., the government provides many social services, such as public schools, roads, police, fire services, etc., what do you see as a corporation's responsibility to pay taxes? What would you consider irresponsible tax breaks, loopholes, etc.?
Well, I guess, is that question for me?
Sure.
Yeah.
Don't you do taxes?
We do taxes, as you know. And generally, people don't like to pay taxes, but people will pay taxes for things that where services are provided, right? And that's what people care about. But yeah, I think everybody has an obligation to pay their fair share of taxes as they have profits. And you know, generally, the clients that I work with, you know, pay a lot of taxes. Actually, you know, a lot of the, you know, these companies right here on the panel with me pay a lot of taxes and support a lot of, and not just federal income taxes, but taxes in foreign countries, local taxes, and so, yeah, everybody has a moral obligation to comply with the law. When we do tax planning for companies, we do it in a legal way. If we did it in an illegal way, that would be really bad. So we don't do that. We help them plan to minimize their taxes so they can have more money to deploy to go fix these kind of challenges that we have.
And maybe an important point to make here is also to say that out of the largest 100 economies in the world, 51 are multinational companies. And even if it's 49 or 48, and this number might fluctuate, that also shows you have a role to play and you need to come to the table together with governments and nonprofits to tackle these big issues, because clearly alone any of these entities cannot get it done.
Similarly, Dell obviously pays its taxes and complies with the law, and Deloitte's helped us actually in that front over the years. But another interesting piece of that is that Dell actually closed its foundation this year. At the end of December, we had the Dell Foundation where we did our giving, and we did get a tax deduction for our charitable gifts. We closed the foundation this year because we weren't able actually to give equipment at the same time with our gifts, so you end up having some conflict of interest rules, and it was very, very important for us to be able to give our equipment and our technology along with our dollars, and now we can combine all of that up without worrying about any tax issues. So we decided it would make more sense for us as a company. It was our responsibility to be able to give at our fullest and not worry about getting the tax deduction on that. So we changed our whole process this year.
Mm-hmm. And that's important to follow that sometimes when a program isn't working, which leads right into our next question from the audience. Can you share an example of a failed CSR program and why you think it failed? How has that failure informed your current CSR strategy? I will give an example. One of the questions I'm asked the most when people go to volunteer or they go to donate, they say, what is the biggest piece of advice you have? And often on the volunteer front, you have people who are very much have an American mindset. I want to get in there. I want to do. I want to create the well. I want to build the school. But what I tell them is the big L word. It's listen. People really want to be listened to. They are so excited that you are there to see a part of their day. They want to know that you understand and care about the culture. And often we come in with our way of building things, with not honoring how the local culture might build. It really struck me, for example, on a trip to Guatemala, the difference between, I would say, inspiration and efficiency. The U.S. in a lot of ways is very, very efficient, but a lot of other cultures operate also off of ritual and cultural and inspiration. And when I was volunteering there on a trip on a farm that was working to be sustainable, some Americans had come in, and when they were planting the corn, they said, oh, no, stop putting in 6 or 8 corn kernels. No, you only need to put in 2, and one of the 2 will survive. And the local tribal leader said, that is absolutely against Earth, God, and our deity. There are 6 to 8 kernels in there. One's for the family. One is to bless the next farmer who operates this land. One is to bless the marketplace. One is to bless God. And those 6 to 8 kernels might have seemed very inefficient from an American perspective, but it was considered very important from a holistic perspective on the ground. And if you went against that, you did not get local buy-in. And I'd say where CSR programs fail the most is when you're not listening and you're not getting local buy-in about how things are done on the ground. It's not just what's most efficient, and it's not the American way. So I would say, listen, and one of the things that we've seen from a recent client of ours with Symantec, they are doing something very innovative, which I've never seen with companies. Most companies go abroad, and wherever their employees are, they set up programs. So they set up a CSR program because that makes sense to do good business on the ground in that locale, get local buy-in, work with political officials like Gabi's mentioned. But what Symantec is doing is they are going and investing and donating in the continent of Africa before they have an office there. What does that say? It says, I care about your community before I'm going to go set up business here. I'm going to cultivate relationships with you, learn about your lives, care about your lives before we do business. I think it's very profound, and it's a wonderful innovation that I think more companies do as we go forward. Could you all describe something that maybe hasn't worked so well, what you've done about it, and how has it changed your current programs?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'd say more than a decade ago, as we deployed money and effort in the community, we did it in a pretty scattered way. You know, there was an itch here, and we would go scratch it. We'd go fix it. Somebody said, can we help this organization? And we would try to go help that organization. So now I actually am honored to lead 3,400 people from Seattle to San Jose. So this is my region. And when someone comes to me and says, I'd like to spend our money on this, I always ask the question, does it line up with our strategy around education? Are you personally involved in helping that organization be better? Not just the cash, but can you increase the business performance of that organization? Because that's what we do every day with clients. That's what I want you to do with the organization. If they can't answer the second question that, yes, I'm personally involved, I'm on the board, I'm on this committee, I'm helping them be a greater organization, then we don't deploy our money there. So we've gotten smarter. So we've gotten much smarter in the last decade about, you know, focus wins. I mean, the whole point is if you focus on something, you focus the institutional energy around it, you can do enormous things.
So we have given at HP a lot of grants to universities in the past to work on specific education issues. And even though I'd like to say that in many instances there were some really good ideas coming out of these research grants, I don't really think we changed the world with that. We changed maybe that university in a couple of classes, but we were not really able to make a sustainable change to solving these issues. So what we said is we really need to change that fundamentally and redeploy these resources. And now we've created a program that we call Catalyst Program, and we've chosen 5 consortia around the world that work with us on some of the really big issues, specifically in STEM education. And STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And these consortia are around the world. There is one, there are 2 in the US, the Sloan Consortium, and also Carnegie Mellon. We're working with Future Lab in the UK, Agastya in India, and Maraca in South Africa. And just one example that we've identified as a big issue is when you go to the emerging markets, you can see that a lot of students get content served up to a smart mobile, and they're really, they have ingenious ways of working with this mobility, and we can learn from them because they really have never seen brick and mortar schools. They will probably never see them because they have very different ways of learning. And they take courses already from different universities around the world. But how do you get a degree in the future when you take courses from 10, 15 different universities? We have to rethink how we serve up content and how university degrees are handed out. These are multiversities and not universities. So we're working with them really on what online learning has to look like as we go forward. And so we have like these 5 different programs. We are producing a community among these many, many hundred of universities that are participating in this program. And we're going to do a final report with the OECD that's going to get globally published to make sure that these learnings then get applied throughout the world and that we really improve learning and education, specifically in sciences. And I hope it's going to make a huge difference. Mm-hmm.
So that's just an interesting point. I'd like to hear from some of you. Who decides if it's not working? Is it a local employee that flags this isn't really working? Who comes in and decides that the university program is not as effective? Do you evaluate this on an annual basis? Do people send in comment cards? What do they do?
Well, it depends very much on the program. We have a dashboard of metrics, and we're trying to go away from output metrics and go to outcome metrics. So it's not as important how many students have taken a class, but really how much have they learned, are they able to create jobs, have we really reached these outcomes. I don't think that anybody really has this entirely solved. There are so many foundations. I know the Hewlett Foundation has spent a lot of money with all these wonderful think tanks on coming up with the metrics. And I think we have pretty good metrics in place, but they certainly need to improve over time. But we're HP, we're a numbers-driven company. I always have to show that we're really reaching or that we're making good progress on the roadmap. So we certainly have all of these metrics in place and try to really base all of our decisions on good numbers and good statistics rather than just gut feel.
Mark, does Deloitte use any of its consulting kind of practices in order to evaluate its philanthropy?
Yeah, all of them. We look to outcomes as well. I mean, the same thing that Gabby was saying. You know, when we look at College Summit, we've actually helped them build the systems to track the number of young boys and girls that actually get into college and successfully go through this process. You know, we're talking about global here tonight, but global starts here. All politics is local. A couple of miles away in Golden Gate Park, there's a lot of kids living there that are frightened and scared and looking for a place to live. So Larkin Street Youth Services helps them exit that life, and we monitor that. How many people move through the Larkin Street system and, you know, exit street life, get a job, can take care of themselves? And actually, in their program, 75% of them actually do exit street life. So that's a very successful program. We put our muscle, our mind, and our leadership behind.
I would just add, we also are a very metrics-driven company. I think all technology companies are. It's how we run our business. But on top of that, we also we have all of the nonprofits that we work with submit us regular reports, and it's, you know, we give them the form about the kind of data and information we need. But we also use some third parties to do some auditing as well. And, you know, we do hear from our employees. They are engaged. And if they see something and they don't think our dollars are being spent well, they will tell us. Mm-hmm. They're very vocal.
And Trissa, how do they do that? I mean, literally, do they send an email or is there a way on their website to respond? How do they get that message through?
So we have regular conversations and just standing phone calls with all of our volunteers around the globe. And you'd be surprised how vocal they are. They don't have a problem telling you what's going wrong or right, but it's good. It's mm-hmm. good.
Good.
You know, Pamela, one of the things we do is we have a volunteer council, so we solicit folks that want to be leaders. It helps them in developing their leadership capability, and that really engages them, and so they're the ones that get deeply involved in these groups. So recently we solicited, and I think we got about 170 people right here in the Bay Area that want to be leaders in the volunteer council. Mm-hmm.
As a reminder, you are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California radio program and how you can scale your global philanthropy and volunteer programs worldwide. Taking another question from the audience, this is a great one. Do your programs have any investing versus giving? So have actually for-profit or financial investing that you actually do in these local areas that could be a part of your global CSR strategy?
Well, I'm sorry, but I think we look at all of it as an investment. So I need to maybe understand the distinction. But when we put money or leadership or pro bono or skills-based volunteerism into an organization that we're building a relationship with, we see that as an investment and look at the outcomes as the ROI. So we do look at it very mathematically and very mechanically, similar to the other panelists. And so we view that as an investment, not just writing a check. Investment in that organization being a great organization so they have a bigger impact and there's higher ROI.
Yeah, it also leads to, for example, and we haven't really talked about that a lot yet, not only understanding customers better, but really developing totally new products that can be commercialized afterwards. I've alluded to one of the programs that we've driven in Kenya during the last year. One of the big issues there is that when babies get born, their blood gets taken, and it usually takes, unfortunately, up to 4 months until the results come back from Nairobi to the mother who might live in a remote area. After 4 months, it's way too late to start the antiretroviral treatment for the baby. But putting in technology into that country meant that we could really speed up that process. So now we get these results back within a week. And one of the solutions that we've developed specifically to address the needs of being away and being remote is a GSM-based printer. We didn't have that. I mean, we all think latest and greatest technology, it has to be e-printing, everything is internet-based. But you go to some of these rural areas in Kenya, and there is no internet. But, you know, a lot of the people still have a mobile, there is a GSM network, and you can basically SMS the results to a printer in remote areas. The mothers will get something in writing, which is important for them. They need to see it. It's a cultural piece as well. They need to see the results in front of them, and then you can start with the treatment. This is a product that will be very good for us, not only to apply to this specific cause in Kenya, but there are many other places around the world where this GSM-based printer will be a commercial product for us. So I think at the end of the day, we've done some really social good, but it also helps the business.
Mm-hmm. Great. Another question here, and this is for Gabrielle. Last night's 60 Minutes showed how big a problem fake pharmaceuticals are in this country. How can we tap into your program to find ways to solve this issue? This is a very interesting question. You've got a very well-functioning program. Can people in the public access it?
Yeah, so first of all, we've also had meetings with the State Department, so I'm getting to meet a lot of the U.S. politicians based on some of these programs because they were talking to us also on the Global Fund, which has a billions and billions of dollars supply chain and which has a lot of counterfeiting. This whole sort of process and solution can be applied to many, many other issues. Actually, we have taken to apply this solution to this case, we've actually taken an existing solution from our imaging and printer business. We have a lot of our cartridges being counterfeit, and we took exactly the same IP and just changed it a little bit and applied it to the medication. It could be applied to just about anything else. Now, we had this ingenious idea from this young man out of Ghana in Nigeria to bring this solution together, but there are a lot of other people that have fantastic ideas that we can really pair up with to offer new solutions. And very positive as well, a lot of the telco companies, the big names in telco, have come to us to say, let's take this to other countries and let's see what other solutions we can apply this to. So we would be definitely open to ideas. If anybody wants to talk to us, come and see me afterwards. I'd love to.
Great. Here's a question that's off topic that I'm going to take, which I think is very important. And it says, I know we have serious global problems, but the U.S. and state of California is in the worst shape it's ever been in my lifetime. Since resources are limited, how do you plan to help our country? The middle class has been very impacted. Unemployment, many of our children go to bed hungry. I will take that because I get that issue a lot, especially since universal giving is global. And, of course, both are important. They are important. And I don't think there's any judgment or right or wrong as to which issues you decide to do. And many of us give in both places and volunteer in both places. What I will say is, having traveled to more than 20 countries across the world, as dire as the situation is here, and it is, we have low education reading levels, we have kids on the street in Golden Gate Park and all over. There are children that don't have homes and a lot of dire problems. But the big difference that I've seen in the U.S. is that we have many, many more resources and options. I think what's a challenge abroad is that, for example, I was volunteering an hour outside of Lima in Peru. We don't really hear about this that much, but most of the women had on average 6, sometimes 8 children. There was no shelter to run to if you were abused, and many, many, more than 50% of the women were abused. There's no shelter to go to. There are rare job training programs. One of the job training programs that I did go to was a very, not ventilated at all, smoky shack that was literally, it was a tool shed. And they'd converted it into a kitchen, and that's where they were training the women, their young daughters, how to make pastries and selling the pastries on the street. That was the training center. When I was in India, 4 hours outside of Bangalore, you literally had to take partial car, then you had to take horse and cart, and then you needed to walk By the time we got to the community, we met with the farmers. There's a 25% suicide rate there because the men cannot provide for their families. And so what happens is they end up taking their lives. So I don't want to diminish or say that there aren't challenges here in the U.S., but there are not the resources that we have in these other countries. So that's kind of my response to it. Would love to hear from the panel as well. Yeah.
Pamela, I'd say the other reason to think globally is, I don't know if you've read this book, The World is Flat by Thomas Friedman. It's a great book, and it talks about how interconnected the world is. And if you look at this upcoming generation of young people that we hire every day, let's say 20 to 24 years old, they want to change the world. My daughter's 21 years old. She's getting ready to graduate from college. She wants to go to Nepal and teach English as a second language there and then come back and teach here. And I've said to her, you could do this in Oakland. You have a lot of problems in Oakland, a lot of social ills we could fix rather than going to Nepal. But a lot of young people, they want to be global citizens. That's kind of a cool thing. I mean, that's a really good thing you want to harness in your global organizations, as we all have. But, hey, we're all about attacking these social ills here in the United States, too. All three of these organizations are. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we definitely encourage our employees to take a look at their own backyard and to see where in the neighborhood they can go and help. And we give them an hour a week, 4 hours a month, that they can work on company time on these issues. So that's a very local thing. But to Mark's point, there is a big desire to also address some of the huge social issues we're facing around the world. And today everybody becomes so aware and sees that we can make a difference. But I think it's a balance between looking at, you know, your own area where you can help and where you can step out and share some of your skills with high school students, show them how to write a resume and be their mentor and coach them. And so I think it's a matter of a mix and balance between the local and also the global thought.
And similarly, we do programs globally, but when we were talking about our Youth Connect, our signature program, the United States is one of the 10 countries where we do run that program, so it's a very important piece. We also probably have the highest giving, and it's for a variety of reasons from employees in the United States. There's a lot of legal reasons why we can't do some of this globally. So literally millions of dollars are given in the United States to various different charities. Dell matches up to $10,000 per employee. And so it's actually, employees view that as a huge benefit in the U.S., so we can match those dollars. So it's a pretty huge impact in the United States that we have.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we've reached near the end of our program, so what we'd like to do is get some words of wisdom from our speakers as to what they would recommend that any audience members here should do regarding global corporate social responsibility.
Want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the things, and Mark alluded to this earlier, before you start, really think about what is the result that you want to make. What is the impact you want? Because otherwise, you do end up with getting all kinds of charitable requests, and if you respond to all of them, you're not going to be able to make an impact. So whether it's education that many of us have chosen, healthcare many have chosen, think about that, what that is. And then think long and hard about what are the pillars of that. So I've told you at Dell, our three pillars are our financial giving, our technology giving, and our people. People, if it's not important to you, you might want to just go do medical research. That it's really hard to have your employees volunteer sometimes in a medical research unless you want to make them the subject of the research. So you really have to focus on what is it you want to achieve and how do you want to achieve that. And then it's everything flows from that is so much easier.
Yeah, and there, I would definitely agree. And there are lots of places where you can go to find out more information, to do the research as to where to engage. But I think we've reached a time where there is no excuse to say, I can't give money because I don't know what's done with it. I think it's not about money only. It's really about your time. It's about the skills that people can bring. And just to take a look around and see where there is a need and how you can make a difference is something that individuals can do. And I think there's also a tremendous opportunity for smaller and medium-sized companies that haven't established the type of programs that we have for us to maybe go and start sharing it with them in order to make sure that more folks get engaged and we reach a wider audience.
Every employee I hire, I say this to them, as you come to Deloitte, whether you're here a year or 31 years like me, try to become famous for something. Try to become famous for that one thing you want to become famous for. And you might not become famous, but the journey will make you great. It's the same in this. Find that thing that you individually or your organization wants to be famous for and having an impact in the community, that one thing. Focus really wins in this regard, I think. So go become famous.
I would say in our work, for example, with Cisco, they have done a tremendous job in making sure that global corporate social responsibility really breathes at every level. So it's everyone from an entry-level employee to managers to VPs and to the CEO, John Chambers, very, very involved. He recently made a trip down to Mexico to speak specifically not just about business, but also about corporate social responsibility and community relations in Mexico and heavily promoting education and technology. And so when you see the CEO take a stance that way, it's very exciting. It's very mobilizing and motivating for managers and employees within the company. And so having that leadership take a role, but also mid-level managers, VPs, and employees themselves. I think sometimes we hear and people say, well, what difference is it going to make? Or my company doesn't necessarily believe in this. But, you know, one thing we have to realize is that, and I've worked with some people this way, they might be resistant sometimes to international giving or to be involved in volunteering, whether it's your friends or whether it's a company. But you don't know what step in the process you are in helping them see a greater view, a greater truth, a greater understanding of the world. So let's say that someone or your manager is not that excited about international giving or about global corporate social responsibility. You're one more conversation helping them gently get closer to understanding a greater view of our world. You might not see it in your lifetime. They might not thank you, but that's not the point. The point is taking a stand for giving, taking a stand for the truth that your company can make an impact. And so you definitely need to speak your mind in a gentle way, in a way that works with your corporate culture, but in a way that you can continue to make a difference. And you are making a difference, even if people don't always agree with you. I have worked occasionally with CEOs who say, okay, I'll show up at this event, or all right, I'll kind of, you know, make sure I make my appearance. But what's been so inspiring to me is that when you give, you are changed. Of course you are. If you're serving a meal, you can't walk away from that and ignore it. You're serving other people. It's very humbling. It's very inspiring. And it gets us down to the core of why we're doing this social responsibility is to care about people. And in caring, then our businesses do well. When we care about others, our bottom line also does well. Our brand does well. Our employees feel good about what we're doing. Our clients feel good about what we're doing. So I do think we have to take that tact that it is about doing the right thing, but understanding that doing the right thing and serving our world also helps our business bottom line. So I want to thank you very much for being here this evening. And I believe Bob is going to close for us.
Well, thank you, Pamela. Pamela, it's been a most engaging evening. As a former corporate CEO myself, I was dazzled by the complexity of the issue that, as you all approached it, and the enthusiasm with which you described the steering through the issues. So on behalf of all the members of the Commonwealth Club, we thank you, Pamela Hawley, for organizing a wonderful evening. And with that, we wish you all a pleasant good night, and thank you on behalf of the Commonwealth Club of California.